Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And today we are going to be interviewing an old school bodybuilder from the 1970s. His name is Richard Baldwin, and Richard was one of the top national level competitors in the 1970s and early 1980s. And he competed against some of the greats like Tom Platz and Samir Banute, worked out alongside Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny Padilla. And Richard was second at the IFBB Mr. Universe contest in 1979 and 1980. I actually got to see him compete in 1979 because I was at that contest in Columbus, Ohio. And then he also competed in Singapore in 1980. And he took second place in the middleweight class both times. And he also did very well to Mr. America and some of the national level AAU shows in the 1970s. So Richard's got a great story to tell about his career, and he's also one of these guys like myself, I think, that is still following the sport and is still very active in training, and he looks fantastic. I think he's 71 now, and he looks amazing. If you ever follow him on Facebook, he's still got those big arms of his, and he's still in good shape. And as you'll hear in our interview, he uses like one time a year every year where he peaks for a contest, and I think Frank Zane used to also do that for many years. We've got a really good interview coming up in a minute with Richard Baldwin. And I do want to mention off the bat that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners in their products. You may have heard of their award-winning Fat Burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand that I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 and 2018 two-time Classic Physique Olympia champion. And Breon is also the 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. And they also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 to receive 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com, or you can make your order on amazon.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, so I just got back from Baltimore this weekend. I was out there for the AAAI-ISMA conference, and this was my fourth one this year, and this was the last one. They do four a year, so it was a really good one. Landed in Baltimore, and then I had to take a train over to Hunt Valley where the conference was. And that was pretty unbelievable experience, because if you've ever seen the show The Wire on HBO, which is one of my favorite, probably is my favorite TV show ever. I still think it's the best show that was ever on TV. If you haven't checked it out, they have the old episodes on Amazon.com. So if you're a subscriber on Amazon, you got to check that out. But anyways, the inner city of Baltimore, they had the lingo down perfect, because I was on this train and I got to, you know, hear some of these people talking on the train, and it really sounded like The Wire. So it was pretty amusing to me because I love that show so much. I've watched it so many times. But anyways, the seminar itself was great, really well attended. I did the strength and conditioning class on Saturday, which went from 9 a.m. to about 4 p.m. And we had about 25 people in there, and I brought several copies of my books. I brought the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends. I brought the MP6 workout, the Diary of the Natural Bodybuilder. And I also brought some copies of my natural bodybuilding book, which came out about 13 years ago now. I think it was 2005 when it came out. And unbelievably, I sold out all the books right away. Like right after we took our first break from the class, everybody went out and bought all the books. So they were all gone. I wish I would have brought more, but you never know how many you're going to sell. And you can only take some, I can only take so many in my suitcase before it exceeds the weight limit. But that was great. That was a great reception. And I did my natural bodybuilding seminar yesterday, and I flew home last night. So, yeah, I was glad to get home because Baltimore was nice, but it was cold. It was like 50s out there, and I'm used to the 90s out here in Tampa. So that was a big change. It's a 40-degree difference, and I can't handle cold weather anymore. So it was really, really good to get home. And I was a guest today on Carl Lenore's podcast, Superhuman Radio, which was a good experience. We talked about training as you get older. And Carl was, he's pretty much a legend in the podcast world, especially when it comes to fitness-related topics. I know Aaron Singerman, my friend, told me about Carl many, many times, and he really admired him. And that's sort of how Aaron got his start in the industry. So it was a real honor to be on Carl's show. He's been around for many, many years. So it was really, I was really honored that he asked me to be on the show. So check that out. If you go on podcast, it's under Superhuman Radio. And we did that today. I think we did it live. I think they were taping it live. So it might be up right now when you hear this. So that was great. And I'm doing a seminar next week out in Odessa, Florida. So if you're in Odessa, Florida, I hope you guys can come out and check that out. It's at Trinity Ultimate Fitness. If you want to come out, it's a free seminar. It's mostly about transforming your body, how you can build muscle and lose fat just by following the correct training and diet programs. It's mostly for people who are just getting into fitness. But if anybody wants to come out and check it out, I would love to have you guys come out. It's going to be a 45-minute seminar. It'll be next Tuesday, October 30th at 6:30 p.m. And again, the address is Trinity Ultimate Fitness in Odessa, Florida. So check them out. I actually have a phone number here if you want to call them if you're in the area. It's 727-205-0427. And if you go on my Facebook page, I will have the information on there too. I'm going to be posting it every day until we get to that seminar because I want to get as many people out there as possible. And my diet is really, really going good. I'm losing a quarter of an inch every week off my waist. I've still got 3 weeks left now to my photo shoot in Chicago with Tony Mitchell. So that is going to be on November 13th. So I will definitely be in shape by then. I had some good hotel lighting this weekend at the hotel in Baltimore. So I was doing a little posing and I'm really happy with the way my physique is looking. I think I mentioned this before, you know, I love bodybuilding. It's just a lifestyle for me. And every year or 2 years, I will diet down and get in shape and I'll either do a contest or I'll just do a photo shoot. I'm not trying to get my pro card or anything like that. It's just, you know, a lifestyle for me. And I just want to give it my best and see how it can look. And you never really know how you're going to look each year because as you get older, your body changes every year. But I was a little worried about that skin on my lower abs. I was hoping that was going to get tight and it is getting tight. So I'm very confident in 3 more weeks, I'm going to be ripped. And I'll look just as good as I did a couple of years ago when I competed. So pretty excited about that. I tried talking to Tom Platz. I was trying to get him on the show, but unfortunately his wife said he will not be coming to do a show with me, an interview. She said they are writing a book. I think it's going to be an audio book about his life. So I told her that I wanted to do an interview with Tom, like I do all the other interviews on my Bodybuilding Legends show, about his whole career. I want to start from the beginning, go all the way through, and then I would add photos and pictures, and it would be a whole retrospective of his career. And she was very adamant. She goes, no way, he is not doing an interview about his career because we're going to do that in the book. So it looks like, at least for the time being, guys, that is off. I tried my best, but I don't know. It's just some people don't want to be interviewed. So that was a shame because Tom would have been a great interview. Still trying to get Samir to come on. He cannot get Skype for some reason. So I have to get somebody from Old School Labs to help him out and set him up with Skype so we can finally get our interview going and we get part two of our interview with Samir. Samir loves to talk, and he loves to talk about his career. So it's just a matter of getting those technical problems out of the way. All right. I do want to mention also we're brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number at 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com, and you will get a free consultation and 20% off your order if you tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I did get a couple emails about the Mike Francois interview, which was last week. No emails, actually. People just made a couple comments on my Facebook page. So if you guys want to comment on the show. I would love to get your emails. Just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions on the show, if you like hearing what you're hearing, anything, just let me know. I like to hear from you guys out there. But Scott McNally from Bodybuilding Nerds Radio said, John, that was a really cool interview and great insight into Mike and his career. Thank you. And Vern Reynolds said, Mike is just as impressive on the inside as he is on the outside. Great guy all around. John Meyer said, he worked for me in high school. He was so dedicated back then, he would not even eat a candy bar. Not only was he good, but he came from a very nice family. Lisa Nicolette said, awesome build. I know what it's like to lose a career to an illness. And Elias Gazul said, one of the best physiques to ever step on a bodybuilding stage. And I also heard from Jimmy Waza, who said, what a treat seeing this today. Great interview. I really enjoyed listening to him talk about his training. All right, so those are the comments we got on the Mike Francois interview. I'm glad you guys liked that. And like I said, if you have any more comments, just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will read your comments on the air or your suggestions. And with our interview with Richard today, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I was a little worried about Richard Baldwin because he was in the path of that Hurricane Michael that came along and hit the Florida Panhandle, and it also hit Georgia, where Richard lives. So he was fearing that they lost their house. And then I did hear from Richard this week, and he said, fortunately, the house is still intact, and he really didn't get any damage. A lot of his neighbors did. A lot of his neighbors had their house completely blown away. But luckily for Richard, his house is still there, but they are going to be misplaced, I guess, or out of their place for a couple months, because it's going to take a couple months to get the power back in that area. So it looks like Richard's going to be living in a hotel for a while. But thankfully, his house was not destroyed, and he is okay. I just wanted to pass that along, give you a little update on Richard before we hear from him in our interview. So without further ado, here is our interview with Richard Baldwin to talk about the old school days of bodybuilding. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I'm very proud to have an old friend of mine. He was a great bodybuilder back in the 1970s, 1980s, and he placed high at the national level. He took second at the IFBB Mr. Universe back in 1979. So we have Richard Baldwin joining us today. How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm pleased to do it.
Well, Richard, I know a lot about your career because I know a lot about a lot of the shows you've done. But I don't know how you got started in bodybuilding. You were born in the same time as Arnold was, 1947. So what got you interested in lifting weights and being a bodybuilder?
Well, it was a slow kind of process. When I was in third grade, I noticed that guys that were like football players in high school, and they got out, they seemed to get fat after they got out of high school, right? They just quit.
Right.
And I saw Jack Lane on TV. So I started that glamour stretch thing, right? That rubber band stretch thing.
Yeah.
And then when I was on vacation in Florida with my parents, I saw a magazine that had John Grimmick in it. And he was doing the wrist roller, but his arms looked amazing. Later, I saw another magazine, and I discovered, oh, it's weights. So I did a bunch of push-ups and chin-ups, and then I figured out, oh, it's weights. I need to get a set of weights. Then I was about 15. I got a set of weights.
Okay.
And so I worked out on the typical three times a day routine until I was in college. My junior year, I was looking at a magazine. And some guys in the dorm said, you look as good as that guy in the magazine. I said, you're kidding me. And so I sent away for an entry blank and entered the Mr. South Texas and won it, and that started it.
Wow. What year was that, Richard?
1970.
Wow. So you won Mr. South Texas. That was your first show.
Uh-huh.
And then you went in the Southern States, right, which was a big show out here in Florida. It's still going on today.
Yeah. I was shocked because when I entered that, people there had already heard of me, and I was kind of shocked, and they thought I would take it before we even did it. And then
really?
Did it.
Huh.
Yeah.
What was that show like back then in 1971?
Well, it was like, it wasn't like it is today, let me tell you. It was like you had to wait till the powerlifting was over, you know?
Right, right.
Like when I went to Mr. Texas, I went at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because we just had, and eventually what I started doing, I became a powerlifting judge, so I wasn't so bored. And some of the early contests were in a gym with a light thrown over a basketball hoop.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's
but
crazy.
Basically, within a few years, they were doing auditoriums, and they totally changed.
Okay, all right. So in the beginning, though, it was still after the powerlifting meets.
Right.
Yeah. So how did your physique look when you first started competing?
Well, it was like I was fascinated with Larry Scott's arms, so I had pretty good arms.
Okay.
And I was after a symmetrical look. So I wasn't the biggest, I wasn't the most cut, but I was trying to, between a good posing routine and having no weaknesses, mm-hmm. I did pretty good.
Yeah. Was that because you could see that you had more of a symmetrical type of physique, or is that the kind of look that you were trying to get?
It was the kind of look I kind of wanted to get.
Okay. So Larry Scott was the guy that you were looking up to at the time, huh?
I used to take pictures of him to the gym. We're just hoping if you get arms even close to that.
Right, right. So when you started competing, what was your training routine like then? Did you change it from just 3 days a week?
Not at first, but right before the Mr. Texas, I changed it to 6 days a week, training everything twice a week.
So were you living in Texas at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
That's where I did my undergraduate work and my first master's.
Oh, really? What was your first master's degree in?
Actually, it was from a theological seminary.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, how many degrees do you have now, Richard? Because I know
I got a second master's in classics, and then majoring in Greek literature, pretty much, and then a PhD with a major in classics and a minor in the modern world, because I wanted to broaden myself.
Uh-huh.
And so I wanted to understand more about modern art and modern literature and stuff. So I did a minor in that, in the modern period.
Okay. Were you born in Texas?
No, I was born in St. Louis, actually. But my mother, we were raised Baptist. My mother wanted me to go to Baylor. So I went to Baylor University in Texas.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. What was the feeling about bodybuilding back then? Because I started bodybuilding in the late 70s. So
either
I can imagine.
Gay or dumb.
Yeah, right. There were so many myths about it back then, right? Because not many people lifted weights even, really, right?
They thought you were muscle bound, too.
Yeah. You were exploding those myths going to college and getting these master's degrees.
Yeah, it surprised me. I remember when I went to my to Florida State for my second master's degree, I heard rumors about me that they thought, oh, this dumb bodybuilder's coming. And they thought, you know, that's all I thought was bodybuilders are dumb. But then when I got the only A in the first class I took, they changed their mind.
Right. So when you started competing and you won Mr. Texas and you won that Southern States contest, did you have any aspirations to continue going up the ladder in bodybuilding? I mean, they didn't really have pro bodybuilding back then, but
they didn't like they do now. Obviously, I mean, pro university, you got nothing, right? In London, I was just having fun, and really, my only goal in life was to win Mr. Texas. Everything after that was just like happenstance.
Really,
having fun, I just kept doing it.
So you did your first national level show the next year, right, in 73?
Yeah, was that the Junior USA?
Yeah, Junior USA, yeah.
Yeah.
So you placed in the top, you're seventh place there, and Paul Hill won that. Didn't Paul go on to win the Mr. America 1 year?
They didn't let him have it. He won all the other three, the USA, Junior USA and Junior America, but they wouldn't give him the Mr. America, and I heard it was because he kept talking about, you guys need to get on some steroids if you really want to do it, so, and they didn't like that.
So, wow.
Yeah. So I don't think he ever won the Mr. America.
Okay. And Annabelle Lopez was third. He was a big name. Doug Beaver, I remember him. Pat Neve.
Yeah. Annabelle's like one of those guys that I think is a little underrated because he's short and he doesn't weigh that much, but he's like perfection head to toe, isn't he?
Yeah. I did a natural bodybuilding contest in Tampa a few years ago, and I gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
He deserves it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. He was kind of a smaller guy, but he was always ripped. He was always in great shape.
Yeah. It has no weak points, really. I mean, he's like symmetrical, proportional. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the guy.
So how did you feel going into that show and seeing those top-level physiques, like at the national level?
You know, John, I was just having fun.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I just remember saying, oh, I'm not taking steroids, but it's like, if that's what I have to do to win, but I'm just going to keep having fun.
Right. And then did you move to Florida after that?
Yeah. After I graduated from Southwestern, I decided to maybe teach Greek, be a classics professor, and so I went to Florida State to get a degree in classics, master's in classics.
And then you went to Mr. Florida in 74.
Yeah.
And you got second there to Mike Richards.
Yeah, and you know what? The funny thing is, after prejudging, everybody came up and after prejudging and were telling me, you won. I said, no, I smell something funny here. I don't think so. And after the contest, when I came in second, I went and asked the judges, could I see the score sheets? Because some judges came up and said they voted for me, you know. And they don't know what happened. And they said, and the promoter said, well, we can't find them, but we lost. So, I wasn't too happy about that. But, you know, that kind of stuff happens to everybody.
Yeah, yeah. A guy named Ivor Butcher was third. Tell me about him, because I always heard stories about Ivor's legs. Like, he had these incredible legs before Tom Platz came along.
Oh, yeah. Ivor was amazing. And he was a hardcore bodybuilder. And his physique was extremely muscular, but not very symmetrical. So mm-hmm. he had difficulty winning the overall, but he'd win like most muscular men. And
yeah.
His legs were the freakiest until class, I think, that I ever saw.
Wow. Yeah, it's funny how things were judged back then, because I had this conversation on this podcast before. It seems like the judges really took into consideration your symmetry and your aesthetics, where today someone like Ivor, you know, who is freaky muscular, would probably easily win, because it seems like judges don't take that into consideration as much anymore.
I don't know. I mean, Tom Platz never won a pro contest.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I can't think of any examples where someone was that off balance and still won.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could you? I mean, they're definitely not going after aesthetics.
Right.
If you have a glaring weak point, I think it counts against you. And Ivor, just his upper body just didn't match his legs at all. It's not mm-hmm. that his upper body was bad.
What did he do to develop those legs? Did you ever have a conversation with him?
No, I didn't ask him.
That same year, then, you did the USA, the AAU Mr. USA, and Pat Neve won that. And you were second, or actually you were third. And Robbie Robinson.
Robbie Robinson was second, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were training partners back then.
Okay, in Florida, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about Robbie. What was he like? What did you think when you first saw him? Because he was a freak right from the beginning, wasn't he?
You know, it's weird. I was a graduate student at FSU, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there were some guys that there weren't many. There was only one gym in town at the time, and it was a small gym. And so the gyms at FSU and at the FAMU are where a lot of people worked out,
okay.
even if they weren't students. And Robbie came. He was staring in the cage. There's kind of a cage around all the workout area. And I just walked up and said, hey, I'm Richard. Who are you? You know, and invite him in. And he acted like that was a big deal in his biography that he wrote.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that's how we started training together.
What did you think of his physique?
About a year later, he improved so much, I thought, man, this guy needs more publicity. And I took some film of him and sent it to Classic Films and sent in a couple of photos of him. And they might
oh,
be
really?
The first ones that were published. Yeah.
Wow. No kidding. Huh. And Dave Johns was the winner of the class, right? And what did you think about Dave?
He's a really nice guy. I don't know him, but mm-hmm. you know, at the contest, he seemed like a really nice guy and
yeah.
definitely a great physique.
Yeah, I remember seeing that picture of the three of you guys together when you got your awards. And Dave went on to win the Mr. America a few years later.
Yeah, and then Mr. Universe, too.
Yeah.
He
very thick.
He was a Theodore, right?
Yes, he did in 78, yeah, when Casey made his comeback, yeah. So how'd you like living in Florida compared to Texas?
Well, I'm still here. I got stuck here with the job. I got a job here as a professor after I did the PhD. Or wait, really,
okay.
before I got did the PhD. And
uh-huh.
I got the PhD and got tenure, and I just sort of stayed here because I think only one out of three professors in the country has tenure. And so I just stayed.
Yeah.
And it was good. I mean, I really enjoyed teaching. It's like I was big on teaching critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And when I taught history, I didn't want them to just memorize a bunch of data stuff. I wanted them to think about human nature, what makes us human, and why civilizations fail, or, you know, look at even different historical figures and why they were successful or why they failed and things like that.
Yeah, that would be fascinating.
Yeah, I would get such a thrill when some student come up and said, I never liked history till this course.
Yeah, yeah. How long did you teach for, Richard?
26 years.
Wow, okay. So you're kind of like Frank Zane also taught, right? He taught math, but he was also a teacher when he was competing.
Yeah, we kind of did the opposite thing. I opened a gym and did all this bodybuilding stuff for a while, for about 10, 11 years, I guess. I just owned a gym.
Oh, really?
And then,
okay.
Yeah, and then I went back to work on a PhD, and I said, oh, you know what? I really do like this. Because I
mm-hmm.
taught Latin at FSU when I was working on a master's degree. Yeah. And I really didn't like teaching at the time because the kids were crazy. They were all getting high and running around campus naked and stuff. And I was more serious. So right. I said, I don't want to do this. I opened a gym. And then when I went back into the PhD, they asked me to teach. So I taught Greek and I taught mythology and some other courses. And I it was a whole different ballgame, and I really enjoyed it. So that's what I decided to do.
Okay. How was the gym that you owned? What year was that?
Let's see. It was like 76 until 87, I think.
How'd you like that experience?
It was boring. And I thought, you know what? I got to find something else to do.
Yeah.
You know, it was like any gym owner can tell you how frustrating it is that you can't train people to put their stuff back up.
Right.
That's like your mom picking up after them. So that kind of drove me nuts. But, you know, it was like, it was interesting in another way because you know this, right? You always meet interesting people in a gym.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of characters.
Oh, yeah. You hit the nail on the head with that word. That's certainly euphemism for it, but yeah.
So let's talk about 1975. That was a big year for you. You won the Mr. Southeastern USA, and you beat Doug Beaver again and Tom Platz, who was in third place.
Yeah, I entered four contests that year and won every one of them.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. Which other ones did you win?
Region 4, the Mr. Southeast USA, the Collegiate Mr. USA, and the Greater Mr. Florida. Or the Bicentennial Mr. Florida.
Oh, was it really? Yeah. And the picture I saw of you and Tom together, that was taken by Doris, right? Doris Berrio?
I think it was taken by Dick Falcon.
Oh, Dick Falcon. That's right. Yeah, right. Okay, you're right. Yeah. Is that the first time you met Tom?
Yeah, we went out to dinner afterwards and had a great time. He seemed like a really nice guy. In fact, I just talked to him not long ago because I found some photos of him that I thought he'd want.
And oh, really?
So I got in touch with him and got an address and sent them to him. And
we had
a little chit-chat back and forth. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I got to know Tom, too, pretty good in the last year or so because we both worked for that Old School Labs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty cool to have a conversation with. He's so intense, you know.
He's like, the thing about Tom is he's so freaking psyched all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun to be around him. Yeah, I've never seen a bad move.
I know, yeah. So now that year, they filmed Stay Hungry, and you were a part of that movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, somebody told me Arnold had seen me in a magazine, so he told the casting people to have me come over and get in it.
Was Arnold giving out trophies at that show? Because I remember seeing a picture of you and Arnold. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that before the movie, then?
It was right after the movie. In fact, that's the one the thing I was telling you before that you mentioned to me in our conversation about Arnold weighed about 205 in the movie. And then a few weeks later, he weighed 215. Then a few weeks later, he entered the Olympia again at 225.
Yeah.
So he was 25 pounds heavier at the Olympia than he was in the movie. But he gained more than 20 pounds of muscle because he lost some fat, too.
Right.
I hear the freakiest thing I ever saw.
Right. Maybe were you training at Coach Jim that year?
No, that was 78.
Okay.
But you know, the freakiest thing I ever saw was in 78 was Danny Padilla. In fact, he was gaining muscle so fast. Like he came out to Gold's weighing 130 at the beginning of summer. By the end, he weighed 190.
Oh, my God, really?
I mean, I asked him at one point, I said, Danny, you got a bicycle pump or something? You pumping up? He laughed. He was something else. I mean, that's the most gifted guy I've ever seen.
Unbelievable. So in like 3 months' time, he put on 60 pounds.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. I can't believe he was down to 130.
He's a genetic freak. Well, he didn't train for a while.
Yeah.
He was just, I think his father owned a grocery store or something, and he was working up there.
Yeah, out in New York,
and then he came back out to Gold's, and he just did everything right, and the genetics took over, and he just blew up.
Wow. So I remember reading, I think we were on Sean Perrine's old site, and I think you were talking on there about how you saw Arnold, and you said every time you saw him, he was getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that at Gold's or was that somewhere else?
Well, that's what we were just talking about. When I saw him at the movie, and then I saw him at the contest where he was the guest poser in President Trophies, and then at the Olympia.
Okay.
Boom, boom, boom.
How did he look when he guest posed?
He freaked me out. I couldn't believe he changed that much in a few weeks.
Wow, that's
unbelievable. It's like watching Padilla in a couple of weeks, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Those two guys, I've never seen anybody change so much in a few weeks like Arnold and Danny Padilla.
Yeah, God, they just had those great genetics, didn't they?
Yeah, and they were like totally I mean, when they're training, they're totally into it.
Yeah.
They're like
Did you ever get to see Arnold train?
No, he was. I was at Gold when he went to World, and he trained early, so I didn't. I never caught him.
Yeah.
But what I did see when I was at Gold, we'd go to the beach every Sunday, and a bunch of guys on Venice Beach, and Arnold would be there even when he's making a movie, usually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
And what year was this?
78.
Okay.
I mean, he'd already started making it, and but he still would come out on the beach on Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, he just loves being a bodybuilder. He just loves hanging out on the beach, right?
Yeah.
It's funny today because if you saw somebody grow that fast, you automatically think drugs, and I'm sure the guys were using steroids back then too, but I think it was just Danny and Arnold in particular. They just had those great genetics where they grew so fast.
Yeah, because there were other guys taking as much as they did, but they didn't grow like that.
Right, right. Yeah, they kind of had similar physiques too, you know, like that they weren't super ripped, but they had that kind of inflated, I don't want to say bloated, but that full muscle belly, you know, Danny and Arnold.
Dense, don't you think?
Yeah.
Like dense muscle?
Right, right. It was
no,
different.
No flap there, just dense muscle.
Exactly.
Like they get today, but I mean, definitely right. No fat, really.
No, mm-mm. But it was just
like
that.
Sculpted. They looked sculpted.
And it was that full-blown look, you know, and I think that's what made them. That's why I think everybody always talked about Danny, and they said, man, if you were taller, you'd be like Arnold, you know, because he had that Arnold kind of physique. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a funny guy, too. Have you ever hung around him and had him do a Joe Weider interpretation?
Yeah, I heard him do it once, yeah.
Oh, he's funny, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's got that great sense of humor.
He was complaining to me one time that Joe asked him if he wanted to go to dinner, wanted to talk to me. He took him to a hamburger joint.
Big dinner.
He does a great story imitating Weider on that story, too.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast once. I want to try and get him back again because he had some really great stories.
Yeah, he does. And he tells them really good, too.
Right, right. So you did your first Mr. America the next year then, right, 1976?
Yeah, uh-huh.
That was, like you said, the bicentennial one. And Cal Scalak won that. What'd you think of Cal?
He made everybody look small.
Really?
And Joe Means made everybody look fat.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe Means won the most muscular. He beat Cal for the most muscular.
I know. I've never seen anybody that ripped before or since, I don't think.
Wow, really? No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, it was like he had no skin, like he just peeled it off.
Jeez, unbelievable.
His arms and chest and back were just, you know, I hadn't seen anything like that before.
Yeah, Cal was always one of my favorite bodybuilders. I always liked his look. He sort of reminded me of like that Arnold look, you know, especially his upper body.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we thought he was going to be the next Mr. Olympia and everything, but I think the politics kind of got him.
Mm-hmm. Was it close between him and Dave Johns in that show?
Not really.
No? Okay.
When he was on stage, that's all you saw.
Yeah, yeah.
Those freaky biceps, I mean.
Right. Yeah, I tried to get a hold of Cal to interview him, but I guess he doesn't want anything to do with bodybuilding anymore.
Oh, what is he, 150 pounds or something? I mean, he's...
Yeah, he does that bike racing now.
Cal still looks pretty good. He's just, like, lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, yeah. He's still in shape,
though. And he's still got biceps, but it's nothing like it used to be, yeah.
Right, right. What did you think of Ron Tufel in that contest? Because Ron was just coming up, too. I think he was only 20 years old at that show, and he got second to Pat Neve at the in the short class.
Tufel's abs were just like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't think he's exactly the symmetrical kind of physique.
Right, sort of blocky. And,
yeah, yeah, he's kind of blocky. But he was impressive.
How did you feel about your placing fourth?
Well, I thought I should have placed a little higher, and I asked the judges what I could do, and they said, get a haircut.
Get a haircut?
Yeah, yeah. They said my hair was too long.
Yeah.
I'm going, I guess that's what Mr. America is. That's, back in those days, you had to do an interview, too.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that, if you had to do the interview.
If you weren't articulate, you got points cut off.
Yeah, I did an interview with Larry Jackson, and he said he had a stuttering problem. So they would never give him the America. He took second to Tony Pearson that one year, and he said he thought he should have beat him. But because he didn't do good on the interview, he thought that's why he got second place.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So what were you doing at that time in your life then, Richard? Were you just teaching, still teaching, or did you own
a gym? That's when I started the gym. I opened a gym then.
Okay. Was that in Florida?
Yes, in Tallahassee.
Oh, Tallahassee. That's right. I remember you were from Tallahassee, yeah. So you did better at the, the next year you got second in Mr. Florida, right?
Yeah, you know what? It was like my own fault. I mean, I was, you know, I was pretty much winning whenever I wanted. So I thought, I knew who was going to enter it, and I'd already beat him before, so I just kind of half did it.
Yeah.
And then I got second. I said, oh, man. So I busted my tail, and that same year, I won Mr. Northern Hemisphere and every body part, I think. And then they, I think the judges gave best abs or something to somebody else so I wouldn't get every body part.
Uh-huh.
But I had to at least win at least one title a year or I'd go nuts.
Oh, really?
So after I lost that Florida, I busted my tail and entered that Mr. Northern Hemisphere.
Back then, how did you guys diet for competitions?
Just low carb.
Low carbs? Okay.
Yeah, I got that from Boyer Co.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. We never did aerobic back then.
Yeah, they never had no cardio machines at all. I tell people that today. They find it hard to believe because so many of the gyms now are so filled with cardio equipment, you know?
Yeah. I always felt if I did any cardio, I'd shrink up. You know, I wanted every calorie to go into muscle building.
Right, right.
You know, I think if you're going to do cardio, it should be that interval training.
Mm-hmm. More intense.
Not like an hour worth of cardio or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I think that burns up so much muscle. I see so many people doing it, especially the girls for the bikini.
I know. Well, it's not just me. I think you and I have the research behind it, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, we got the experience, that's for sure. When did you meet Boyer Co?
1971.
Okay.
It was like Bill Pearl was about to enter the Mr. Universe again, right?
Yeah.
And he challenged Arnold and every other bodybuilder. And everybody showed up except for Arnold. We wouldn't let him because he saw Pearl guest pose and he freaked out and he didn't let Arnold enter. And
wow.
I'll beat Sergio, Frank Zane, Boyer Co, everybody. And the thing was, he gave a posing exhibition at, I think it was the Mr. Southern America, and I was a judge at it.
Really?
And Boyer, I went to Red LaRue's gym, right? And
mm-hmm.
I met Boyer. And so, and he knew who I was from the magazines for some reason. I don't know. But anyway, so we got into some conversation stuff. And then at the contest, he gave an exhibition. Then after he got through, he came back in the back of the auditorium, and I was back there too, and we were watching Pearl, and Boyer said, I don't know why that old guy's entering, and I'm thinking, Boyer, I think he's going to win. I mean, Pearl freaked me out. I've never seen perfection like that in my life.
Really?
I mean,
wow.
To describe him, everything was perfect. Head to toe perfect, posing perfect, everything timed right. I mean, couldn't see any weak points, and that tan, you know, he's Native American, right?
Right.
He had this glowing gold tan that was just, I don't know, he looked like a Greek god that just came down to show us how to really do it.
Right, right. And was he really big, too?
Yeah. I mean, he was huge, but he was super nice, too, because I got caught him before he left to get an autograph, and I got my photo taken with him, and he was the nicest guy. In fact, I've run into him a couple times, like in the Mr. Universe of the Philippines and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's always a super gentleman, super nice guy. And,
right.
You know, he's one of the humblest. He's like John Grimmick, humblest heck of the bodybuilders I've met.
Yeah. Well, that's great to hear because I rarely talked to anybody that saw Bill Pearl in person or watched him pose. I talked to Boyer, of course, and he saw him. But, it's great to hear a firsthand account of how Bill Pearl looked.
He was amazing. I mean...
And then describe his posing, too, because I heard he was a really, I don't think it was like technically great poser or just very powerful on stage.
He exuded power, but he didn't, it wasn't a grunt and groan kind of thing.
Right.
It was more artistic and his transitions were perfect.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't hold a pose too long or too short. He didn't shake when he was flexing.
Right,
His facial expression matched his pose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... You know, everything you could expect from a professional bodybuilder, that's what he did.
Wow. That's
and
awesome.
You know what? You couldn't find an error in him, you know, a weak point. He perfected each pose that he did to fit his physique.
Right, right. So it's the way he presented himself as well as his physique.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. How close was that to the universe?
I think it was only weeks.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So he was just about peaked out.
Yeah.
Not quite, but really close. He was amazing.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, Boyer looked damn good, too.
Oh, yeah.
So
Boyer was always good.
So they were only a few weeks out.
How do you think Arnold would have did if they would have been on stage together at that universe?
You know what? That's a question that, as you well know, we can't really answer because You got to see them both at the same time under the same lighting conditions, all that stuff.
Right.
But the pictures I saw Arnold in the 71 Olympia, I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
I mean, I think his best years were 71, 74.
Right. I agree.
73. 73 and 74 and 71.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just like a make huge rift. I mean, just, and I think 74, he hit everything.
Yeah.
Size, everything.
Yeah.
But, I wouldn't say the Pearl would have beat him.
Yeah. It's
you know, I can't say he beat Pearl either. You know, it's
yeah, yeah, it's one of those questions we'll always ponder, you know. But
they were both, like, spot on that year.
Yeah, it's such a shame that Weider stopped Arnold from going in that.
Yeah, he was trying to build up the Olympia, too, make it the big deal.
Mm-hmm, right.
It wasn't that big a deal. The NABBA Universe was a big one still.
Yeah, yeah, at the time, yeah. So the next year, in 1978, Richard, you won the Mr. Florida, finally, right?
Yep, yep. I decided not to take any chances this time. So I did my best this time instead of, like, goofing off or anything.
And I'm looking at the results here online, and that was a big show. There was a lot of guys in that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was one of the biggest Floridas up to that time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Like 40-something guys in it, wasn't there?
Well, they only got the top five listed in each class. But one thing I noticed, they started doing it in weight classes that year, huh, instead of height classes?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So you won the lightweight class. What did you weigh for that?
Probably in the 170s.
How did that feel to finally win the Mr. Florida?
It was like a relief. It was like, finally, you know.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to live in the state and not be the state title holder.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're placing so high in the national level shows.
Yeah.
And then you won your class at the Mr. USA that year too, right?
Yeah, that was when Tufel won it, right?
Right, when Tufel, right.
And I won Best Arms?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah,
and Ron was great, and you know we had some good conversation after the contest and all that stuff,
uh-huh.
And seen him in the gym, and he was a cool guy. We always got along.
Did he live in Florida too? He was Pennsylvania.
I don't remember,
right?
He won in California.
Yeah, that was probably when he was at his peak, right, in 1978.
Yeah, yeah, he looked great.
Yeah, yeah, he really.
Although
I thought
he looked great in '80 too. To tell you the truth.
Oh, when he took second to Samir, or no.
I'm thinking the 78 America. When he came second to Tony.
Yeah.
Pearson, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Tufel should have won.
So you were right behind those guys. You were right behind Tony Pearson and Larry Jackson.
Yeah.
And that was a tough class. There was like 20 guys in that at the America that
year.
Yeah,
yeah.
You beat out Robert Reese. I remember him from Wisconsin. Ray Menser, Mike's brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. C.F. Smith.
Yeah. That was a crazy guy, C.F. He was. You know, Bob Reese came up to me after the contest, and well, after I posed, and he said, "You know what? You keep beating me, and I never understood why." And then I just watched you pose, and he said, "You look a lot bigger on stage than you do backstage." So he was pretty nice to me about it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was always a real big, thick guy. I've seen him compete
because
I lived in Illinois, so I saw him compete a couple times.
Yeah, he was wondering how this little guy backstage could beat him. And then he said, "I understand that when I saw you on stage." So nice.
Yeah, that was nice, though. You wouldn't hear that today from too many bodybuilders.
I think that was an age when we all were like buddies, and we told each other what we were doing, what our diet was, all that stuff. It wasn't so mean and competitive, you know, that it got in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a different era, right? Especially the 1970s. That's when bodybuilding was still kind of young and sort of near their golden age.
Exactly. Yeah. The money hadn't ruined everything yet.
Right. Like I said, there really wasn't much professional bodybuilding back then.
No.
What'd you think of Tom Platz that year at that America? Because that's the year Tom really made his progress.
He'd improved a lot from when I beat him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he only beat me by one point, though, didn't he? Maybe I'm thinking about another America.
I thought it was real close that year between Tufel and Platz. But then Ron beat him, and then Ron lost the overall to Tony Pearson, and then he got mad and left. And then they had Tony pose against Tom for the Mr. Universe.
Yeah, and then Tom beat Tony there.
Yeah, yeah.
That was so that tells you about the judging, you know.
Right, because they use a different set of judges.
You know, when I was training at Gold's, I heard this crash in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked back at it, and it was Tom. He was squatting like crazy, and he fell. And he had some guys put that weight back up on the squat rack, and he went back to squatting. I've never seen he's the hardest training guy I've ever seen.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard he was really strong too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I never saw anybody like do the reps and the concentration and be as psyched as he was. And I trained, like one day I went in and Samir wanted to work calves. Mm-hmm. And he burned my calves up. But I mean, Tom was crazy. Samir trained hard. I'm when you get at his level, it's a whole new ball game. I mean, the psych and the going to failure, really, you just keep going till you can't move. But Tom was a freak. I never saw anybody train like that. Zane, the same summer I was out there, I was friends with Bill Reynolds, and we'd hang out. He took some photos of me and stuff, as well as Balik and some other guys out there. But I went with him to World. He was going to interview Frank Zane and write about his workout, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Frank was like a machine. He wasn't spitting and yelling or anything. He was just like a machine. I never seen anything like it. I mean, he hardly rested between sets or between body parts that he was working. But that's the best thing I can say. He looked like a machine. So it was a totally different kind of working out than Platt, who was like at this explosive, like, locomotive, you know?
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Do you notice today in the gym how people train? I just talked to Mike Francois last week, and we were talking about training back then and how hard the guys used to train back in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and how people train today. It seems like a lot of people are on their phones now, and they're getting these different exercises from YouTube or wherever they're getting them from. But back then,
they don't do as many barbell exercises. They're doing more machines.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when it was more basic and more primitive, I guess, you know, I mean, it was just all about hard training. And when you go into the gym, it was like, almost like I've had conversations with other guys too. It's like a badge of honor. You go in there and you got to train hard. You know, you got to push yourself to the limit.
Yeah. But I think a lot of us train too heavy, because most of the guys I know from my era are having hip replacements, knee replacements, getting neck surgery, like Pat Neve. But he's got 7 vertebrae he's getting operated on this week.
Yeah, I was going to interview him this week, and he told me he was getting a surgery done. So we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks.
That's nasty stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
But he's a world champion powerlifter as well as bodybuilder.
Yeah, he was super strong, especially as a bench press.
Yeah, he was like a world record holder in that bench press.
Yeah. So did you learn from watching Zane how he trained and stuff, how he was training, like you said, like a machine?
I think, yeah. And you know what I learned? He was like, you know, he's like into the Buddhist stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, that's what he was doing. He was like in the Zen mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could tell he was blocking everything out and just focusing on the mind muscle.
Yeah.
So that's probably why he was so effective.
Okay. Yeah, I remember reading an article by him once, and he said he was training and he like went to the bathroom or something, and somebody started talking to him, and he said he completely lost his concentration and the whole workout was ruined, you know, because he just got
out of
his
zone. You don't talk to Zane while he's working out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Gary Brady's got a story about that. You'll have to ask him.
Okay.
He made the mistake of talking to Zane when he was working out before.
Yeah. Let's go to 79. Cause that's when you did the World Amateur Championships. But before you did that, you did Mr. America again. And Ray Menser was the winner that year, right?
Yeah. I didn't do very well because they didn't have weight classes in the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
But then I placed high as far as weight, like the universe. And I think Pat Neve was ahead of me. And then something happened. I don't know what it was. And then they called me up like 3 weeks before the universe and said, we want you to enter the universe in the middleweight class. How much are you weighing? I said, well, I'm weighing about 195. I said, oh, man, we need you to get down to 176 in 3 weeks. Can you do it? I said, yeah. Most shredded I ever was.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I was wondering about that because I saw in America they had height classes, and you were in the medium height class, like you said, and you got eighth place. But then you went to the World Championships in the middleweight class, and you got second.
Yeah. I was on tuna and water. I lost muscle as well as fat, but I was shredded.
Well, actually, I saw you in that show, Richard, because I went to that contest in Columbus, Ohio that year. That was the first time I saw you on
stage. Yeah,
great contest, yeah. And I thought it was you were really close to Roy Duvall, who ended up winning the class.
Yeah, I had people say that I should have won, and that the reason Roy was is because Weider was going to use him. He wanted somebody to win the contest for Britain because he was going to move his product in Britain. And somebody told me he was on all the Weeder products after that contest. Now, I'm not saying I don't know that's what other people are telling me. I do not know that.
Yeah, I've been saying
that Roy looked great. I'm not whining about it.
Yeah, Roy did look good. I don't want to take anything away from him either. He did look really good in that show. So
why I said that. I'm not trying to take anything away from him.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys both looked excellent. You, like you said, you were shredded. Your abs were really, really, really ripped, and I remember how great your arms looked.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
And there was 30 guys in that class, 30 guys in the middleweight class. That's crazy. How did that feel, taking second in an international lineup like that? That was the first international show you ever did, right?
Yeah, I think it surprised a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
Especially since I only had 3 weeks to train for it.
Yeah, really?
I mean, I was still lifting and all that stuff, but I wasn't training, doing contest prep.
Yeah.
So to turn everything around that fast, I think, surprised people.
Yeah. Wow. Let's go into 1980 then, because you went back to the America, and now they had weight classes, and you won the middleweight class then in 1980.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was my only goal, you know, to see if I could become a national champion.
Mm-hmm. How was the competition that year?
It was pretty good. I mean, a lot of guys entered, and I wasn't, to tell you the truth, I didn't pay much attention to the contest. I just wanted to go do my thing. For one thing, I was concentrating on Laura Cohn because I trained her for that contest, for the Miss mm-hmm. Versus America.
Yeah.
And so I was concerned about her winning and as much as I was me doing anything in the contest. So
okay.
I was trying to, like, I don't know, going on automatic for myself and then uh-huh. trying to focus on her, make sure she didn't make any missteps so that she'd win. And she did.
Yeah, now that you mentioned it, I forgot about that. That was the first year they had the Miss America, right? In bodybuilding. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I trained for the Miss Florida, and she won that. And then she asked me if I trained her for the America, so I did.
Wow, that's great. How many girls were in that? Do you remember?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, because women's bodybuilding really took off when they started it.
Yeah, it did.
And that was the first year they had the Miss Olympia, too.
Yeah.
That was the year Rachel won, yeah.
Yeah. That's when really women's bodybuilding really took off. I mean, they had some contests before, but they couldn't make up their mind whether it was a bikini thing or what.
Uh-huh.
But Doris Barrio is the one that really pushed weight training women.
Right.
Trying to make it female bodybuilding. So I'm
right.
What do they call her? The godmother of bodybuilding?
Yeah.
I was sorry to hear she recently passed away. Was it a year ago?
Yeah, about a year ago, yeah. Yeah, I was sad to hear that, too. I got a chance to meet her out here in Florida, and I had some conversations with her, and I was surprised, too, because she was really in, seemed like really good health. You know, I don't know what happened.
She and I always got along, and she'd send me photos. She took several, I did several posing sessions with her, and she'd send me poses back. Even the last few years, she sent me some photos that I didn't know she'd taken even. I was sad to hear that she died.
Yeah, she took a ton of photos when she was around, because I remember she did a lot of covers, a lot of photo shoots, especially with people in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she kind of took, she learned photography from Dick Falcon.
Okay,
and she just kind of took over his spot. You know, she just got very productive.
Yeah.
He'd travel a lot, and he kind of stayed in Tampa.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I never met Dick Falcon, but, you know, I live in Tampa now, so I've, of course, heard stories about him from some of the older people around here.
Yeah, he was crazy. He was about, what, 5'2 or something? And, like, he was wound up like, I don't know, a little weasel. I mean, he was funny.
That's funny. And then you did the Mr. Universe again that year, right? 1980.
Yeah, decided to give it another shot.
Where was that? That was in Singapore, right?
No, in the Philippines.
Oh, the Philippines. That's right.
Manila. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, and they had the leader of the country there, right? Well,
yeah,
Ben Weider brought
him
up there.
Promote Manila as a modern city and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so he thought he'd get a lot of publicity with the Mr. Universe. And he handed out trophies and stuff like that. We had to shake his hand, go to a party afterwards and all that stuff. Yeah.
Right. How'd you like that experience of competing out there?
I did, except I knew that it was time to hang it up.
Oh, really?
The steroids were starting to get out of control, and I heard rumors about other drugs coming into the sport, and I decided it's time to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I've had fun. You know, I had more fun than I thought originally. All I want to do is win Mr. Texas. I said, and I also decided I need to have more of a life. I mean, you know, when you get to that level, like the Miss Universe of 79, it's like, mm-hmm. okay, what are the guys in Czechoslovakia doing right now? They're going to come back and, you know, what can I do to stay up here? And it's like, you all you do is think about eat, sleep, and training. And, you know, your life kind of passes you by. And I just said, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. especially being an intellectual person like you were, being college, you know, getting those college degrees and stuff, I'm sure you had more of a wider range.
Yeah, I was trying to, figure out what I wanted to do the rest of my life. I was still a gym owner. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was I expanded the gym and moved it to a larger facility. And then I was thinking about doing it again. And then I said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go finish the PhD up to the point of all the dissertation they call ABD.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to get a job, and then I'll finish the dissertation. I'm going to be a professor. So that's what I did.
Oh, okay. You mentioned the drugs. How bad or how pervasive was the drug use back then in the 1970s, going into 1980?
The winners were doing tons.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't realize, but they wouldn't admit it. But, it was just pretty tough. But I don't think it was as bad as, and I guess it's maybe, when I say tons, it's like what they do a day today. I mean, maybe 300 milligrams a week.
Yeah.
And usually they would take something like primobolan and deca and test and dianabol.
Okay.
And kind of mix them up, but they wouldn't take over 800 milligrams a week.
Right.
Most of them. But then it started getting really crazy after that in the 90s.
Yeah,
In the 80s and into the early 90s. And then you started having insulin growth hormone come into it. Yeah, all out drug wars, right?
Yeah, back in your era, it was just steroids, right?
Yeah.
Were guys taking them all year, or were they just, like, I've heard stories of some of the old-time guys said they only took them before competitions, or were they taking them all the time?
I think it was mainly about 3 months before competition.
Yeah. And then would most guys just get off the rest of the year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that's
true,
then.
They call it the bulking time. And what they, the reason they took steroids was because when they dieted, they would lose muscle. So they thought,
right,
if we take steroids, we won't lose the muscle. But they weren't counting on the steroids to build all the muscle up.
Right. So a lot of the guys back then were building their muscle just naturally, just with training.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They were doing heavy training and yeah.
That's good to hear from someone who was in the sport and competed at high levels. So, you know, because you never really know what to believe. And I heard that from many guys saying they didn't do them that much, and they only did them before competitions.
Yeah, and they counted on squats, deadlifts, benches to build up the muscle, right?
Yeah.
A lot of compound movements, which I don't see people doing anymore.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah, like I said, the training was such a big part of it back then, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny now because now if you read these, stuff that's on the internet and stuff, anybody that has muscle, everybody accuses them of using a ton of drugs. It's almost like these younger guys believe that in order to have any kind of muscle, any kind of physique at all, you have to use a ton of drugs. And I think that's where it's gotten to the point now where people believe that you can't even build muscle naturally. It's all about drugs.
You know, in 1975, when I won 4 contests that year, I won every one I entered, right? And people started spreading rumors that I was on steroids. I wasn't taking anything.
You weren't taking anything back then?
Wow,
that's amazing, Richard. So you got all the way up to the national level and took second in Mr. Universe twice, being clean.
Well, by the time I went to the national, to the international run, I was taking some stuff.
Okay. But when you're doing local shows.
That's not what some of the others were.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that way of thinking that you didn't want to go further with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of guys would just take, when they said we were taking steroids like 3 months before a contest, it was like 10 milligrams of dianabol a day or something.
Yeah, right.
But there are some other of my fellow competitors that I found out later, and I won't name them, but anyway, were taking a shot of test every day as well as other steroids.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy
how... That wasn't me, and that wasn't a lot of the guys I knew.
I mean, when you think about how it started with Larry Scott, I mean, those guys were probably taking hardly anything, and then it just seemed like every decade or every generation, it just kept increasing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, that's in every sport. I mean,
yeah,
when people are entering the international level, most people that are going to be successful will do anything to win. I mean, Boyer Coe, I just heard, was it on your show that he said if he was training today, he'd take everything they're taking?
Yeah,
you got to do it to win, you know?
Right.
Boyer's always been a straight shooter.
I mean, he is,
I've had personal conversations with him, and he's always answered any question I have straight up. I mean, he's not a BSer.
No, he's a great interview because he's very honest and very open.
Absolutely. And he's got a great memory, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He remembers everything. He has some great stories.
He's got a million stories, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Larry Scott, I saw some pictures of you and Larry Scott training, and I think you had a picture of him when he did his last photo shoot, right?
Yeah.
I just saw that recently on Facebook. So what was it like meeting Larry and training with him, since he was such an idol of yours?
I met him back at one of those, I think it might have been the Greater Mr. Florida contest. He was a guest poser.
Okay.
And there was a party the night before. And at the party, we sort of got into a conversation, and he said, "Who do you think's going to win tomorrow?" I said, "Oh, I am." We're like, "Boy, I'm better now after that."
Yeah.
Maybe I did. But we started, Larry was a deep thinker. I mean, he was concerned about the meaning in life and stuff like that. He was a Buddhist for a while. He eventually went back to Mormonism. But, I mean, he was concerned about meaning in life and things like that. And so we got into a metaphysical discussion as well as discussion about bodybuilding stuff. We went off into philosophy and theology and things like that. And he said it was the first time he'd ever stayed up all night talking to anybody.
Wow.
So we hit it off right away. Yeah. I see him every once in a while. We got into some correspondence. And then I was promoting the Mr. Southern USA contest, and I had Dennis Cerino, Frank Zahner, these guys, right? So I had Larry guest pose one time, and he stayed at my house. So he was there for, I don't remember, it was 3 or 4 days or a week or something. And so, you know, I'd take him around to my friends and to parties, and we also just go out to eat and have a big conversation. Mm-hmm. And we just hit it off really well. And then later, he was going to have a book. Somebody wanted to do a book on him, photos, and somehow I got involved. And Larry was talking about a biography, so I started writing a biography of him, right? And that photo shoot, his last photo shoot, were photos that were going to be in it. And I sent off some of the early work and some photos to a publisher, but they just wouldn't go for it. And what I should have probably done is, you know, what J.K. Rowling did with her work is sent it to about 100 publishers, and eventually got it published.
Yeah.
But I was so busy as a professor teaching 6 classes a semester, I just didn't have time to do that.
Right.
So I gave up on it, and then he produced that Loaded Guns book.
Okay. Now, how old was Larry when you did that last photo shoot?
I think 63.
Yeah, that's what I remember. He looked amazing. He looked great.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. He always had those arms, right?
Oh, yeah.
How was he to train with?
I didn't train with him.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
We were just busy, you know. But he was definitely a guy who, I think he was kind of like class on his arms, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because not only would he go to failure on reps, but he'd do what he called burns afterwards.
Yeah, I remember that.
Partial reps until he just couldn't move. He didn't stop just when he couldn't do a rep.
Right.
So he was another one of those guys that just took it to the limit.
Yeah. Well, that had to be great meeting him and being friends with him, huh, after you idolized him when you were younger.
Are you kidding? Yeah, I'm going, holy mackerel. It's like when I met John Grumick when I was in college, you know? One summer I had a chance to go to Pennsylvania to work for the summer because, you know, I was working my way through college. And I got to go close to York. I was in Harrisburg, and I'd drive to York and just wait for Grumick to come down from his office and work out. So I got to see him work out. I got in conversation. It was great. So being able to meet Larry Scott, too, and they actually become friends was one of the highlights of my bodybuilding career. Absolutely.
Yeah. Out of all the guys you saw in your career, Richard, which guys really stand out? You mentioned Bill Pearl, and that sounds like that was one of them. You got to see Arnold, of course, even though he wasn't at his peak. But which bodybuilders, whether it was in the gym or on stage, really stood out for you?
I think in the gym it was Serge Nubray.
Oh, really? Okay.
When he walked in, it was like he left his skin outside. I couldn't believe how tight his muscles were with no fat.
Wow.
And it wasn't like skinny withdrawn look.
Yeah.
It was just like, how did you do that? You know? Have that much size and be that ripped, that low body fat.
Right.
And on stage, I think it might have been Frank Zane in 78. Do you remember how ripped he looked?
Oh, yeah. I was at that show, yeah.
Yeah, I know you were. That's why I said, do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, he was amazing. And the thing is, he won in 77, but when I was out there in 78, Frank came in the gym one day, and I told him the guys were shooting their mouth off like they're going to kick your ass. And they thought they could beat him on size, right? Well, he came in shredded and kicked their ass.
Yeah.
Did you ever notice how Frank looks like a tennis player in clothes, but on stage he looks bigger because he's got real narrow hips.
Yeah.
Those wide shoulders. So right. It's an optical illusion, but he's just amazing.
Yeah, he is amazing. Yeah, my dad said that, you know, because my dad took me to, when I was a kid, he took me to those Mr. Olympia contests in Columbus, and he goes, he looks like you said, he looks like a tennis player. He walks right by you, you'd never even notice him, you know, if he's got a suit on or a tracksuit on or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but on stage, you know, I try to tell the people this today who think he was so small. I said, you have to remember they had an under 200-pound class and an over 200-pound class, and the guys weren't as big back then. So he was in the under 200-pound class, but he was always one of the biggest guys in the under 200 pounds. He was tall. He was 5'9". He wasn't short. He wasn't like 5'5 or 5'2". And
he won it weighing in the 170s. His first two Olympias, right?
Yeah, 180, I think, yeah. But like you said, he had those wide shoulders. He had that small waist, the small hips. It was just such an illusion.
Perfect bone structure.
Yeah, yeah. And he presented himself so perfectly.
Whereas Larry Scott was the opposite. He had narrow shoulders and wide hips.
Right, right.
So he had to pack on a ton of muscle on his deltoids and really do like twisting poses to make his waist look smaller. But that's what he did. He hid his flaws by carefully picking his pose. I think, was it Ray O'Blair as well as Weider that helped him
with
his posing routine? Yeah.
Yeah. And with the protein, yeah. Because he was always taking that protein powder, yeah. Wow, that's great what you said about Serge Nubre, because I never got a chance to see him in person either.
I've been lucky. I mean, I was standing next to Steve Reeves at the Mr. USA. I got to
go back to
when Reg Park was back there. I got to meet Grimek. I got to meet every hero I ever had. I got to meet him and actually a lot of times become friends with.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, you were around during that time when all those greats were around, right?
Yeah.
So you came back into competition, right? Like back in 84, you went back to the Nationals?
Yeah, what was that about? Oh, I know what it was. Everybody was talking about Daryl Stafford. He's going to he can kick your ass. I said, I don't think so. So I trained for a few weeks, and I beat him. And then I got high enough to be in the night show, but I said, nah, I'm going. I did what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
that was bad, wasn't it? I shouldn't have said that. Now, Daryl went on to do really great.
He did.
For shows.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't have anything against him because he and I always got along. It was some smart-ass guys.
Right, right. And then you were in the Southern States back in 88, so you were in your 40s then, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about entering the Nationals again. And I think of that contest, I beat the current Mr. Alabama or something. I felt bad about it. So what am I doing? And I just didn't enter.
Oh, okay. But you did do the Masters Nationals in 96.
Yeah, and I didn't realize how many drugs people were using then. And my son got really upset after the contest. He said, Dad, you're not paying attention to me. Because as soon as I got off work, I went and trained. Then I went to ate supper. Then I went back in the gym and trained. It was time for him to go to bed. And
right.
So I said, oh, man, I can't. You know, if he's feeling I'm not giving him attention, I got to just give this up. So I never competed again.
Yeah, okay. So how's your training now, Rich? I see pictures of you on Facebook, and, man, I'm amazed at how great you look. I mean, you're in your 70s now, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm crazy. It's like I can't stop peeking out every spring, right?
So you do that every year? You try to peak?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Now, I'm experimenting right now. I cut down to training everything once a week and just doing three workouts a week.
Okay.
Like, I do legs and shoulders on Mondays, and Wednesday I do chest and back, and on Friday I do arms. And I haven't figured out whether it's bad or good yet. I haven't been doing it long enough.
Okay.
I may go back to doing everything, like, twice a week.
And then you diet down every year, and you get ripped again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm definitely afraid of being a fat old man, right?
Right. I think I'm going to be the same way. I'm in my 50s now, and I still do that, too, even though I'm not competing.
I was
going to
say, you're crazy, too, John.
Right.
What it is,
I'll be right with you.
Those hard, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. Once that iron bug bites you, right, you can never give it up.
Absolutely. It's part of who we are.
Yeah. But I feel the same way. I'm afraid of letting it go because as you get older, it gets harder and harder, and I don't want to wake up one day, you know, being 60, 70, and then be like, oh, my God, I look just terrible. Because then you're never going to get it back. You know, if you let it go that far, you know, you're never going
to exactly, get it back. Exactly.
Right. So you got to stay on top of it every year.
It's a lot harder to get back in shape than it is to stay in shape.
Exactly, right. And so we're already in shape, so it's easier just to keep it going, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you still got those great arms. And, you know, every year when you peek out, your abs are still popping out. So, man, you're doing a great job.
I tell you what, if I come out of the shower, there's this big long mirror there where the double sink is there. Mm-hmm. And if I come out and I turn and look in there, and I can't see any abs, I would freak out.
Well, that's
I
good.
Think I've got dysmorphia.
Yeah, right. But this is a healthy dysmorphia, though, right?
So far.
Yeah. Now you retired,
yeah,
Richard.
I was at the doctors the other day, and they were like freaking out. They said, the guy kept saying, "It says on here you're 71." Yep. The guy couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet they really freak out at the doctor's office.
Yeah.
I can imagine some of the bodies they see who are your age, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hell, I was in the gym talking to this guy, and I was trying to make him feel good because I figured he's about my age. I said, boy, it's not getting any easier. And he was 55. I'm like, and I'm going to say, what have you done to yourself?
Yeah.
Or not done for yourself?
Right. Well, I think when people just don't exercise at all, even when they get to 40, you know, their bodies start to fall apart. Yeah.
I mean, when I see some guys at the gym, they're in their 20s and they're back changing, and they take their shirt off, and I'm going like, "Well, you need to work on your diet. You're in your 20s.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. Not everybody is as crazy as you and I are.
Right. So when did you retire from teaching?
August, a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay. So it's been pretty recent.
Yeah.
Okay. How are you enjoying retirement? I see you're traveling
a lot. Well, I'm getting to do stuff I didn't have time for before.
Yeah.
Like I've got two telescopes. I've been doing some of that. And then I decided to write this paper and see if I could get it accepted at the Classics Convention at the University of New Mexico. And
okay.
It got accepted, and I presented that paper. And another professor saw the paper, and so now he was impressed with it, and we're writing a book on Euripides and Sophocles.
Really? Wow,
so I'm
that's
getting
great.
To do some research in the classics again, like I really enjoy. So I'm having fun with that. And I got another paper I'm writing on Aristotle's aesthetics and how modern neuroscience seems to confirm a lot of things he said in that work about why we think something's beautiful and how Ramachandran, this neuroscientist, has some theories about that that seem to coincide with Aristotle. So I thought, I think I'll write about that. So I'm having fun.
Oh, great. So you're doing what you love to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, like every day Saturday, you know, I wake up and say, okay, what do I feel like doing?
Right, right.
Like today, I just decided, I think I'm going to read something about the scientific revolution. So I read some work by Francis Bacon and by Rene Descartes.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I feel like doing, I can do that. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. Can you still keep in touch with Jerry Branham? I see you guys are always talking on Facebook.
Yeah, in fact, we haven't been doing the filming lately. Because for one thing, something was going wrong with my computer, but we still keep in touch, and we may do some more. I don't know. We were having fun.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I started to do some stuff, and I was going to interview Samir, and I saw your work, and I said, oh, my God, John is really good at this. I don't need to do it. Because you know, I really wanted to preserve a lot of the achievements of these guys.
Yeah.
You're doing such a good job, and you do better than I could because you really prepare for it and know the history, and you do a great job. And so I just said, I don't need to do it.
No, thank you. Yeah, that's why I'm doing it too. I want to preserve that history too. Plus, I love it. You know, I mean, I grew up reading about these guys. Yeah.
Yeah, you did great.
Oh, thank you, and I appreciate it. Well, Richard, it was great talking to you. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about your career and about your training and stuff, and hopefully we can have you back on the show. But it was great hearing some of your stories. Thanks again for coming on again.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, John.
All right, Richard. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Keep staying in shape.
Have a good one.
All right. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. And thank you again to Richard Baldwin for that great interview. Next week, we will be joined by another old school bodybuilder, Mr. USA himself, John Defendis, who will talk about his insanity or intensity training that he did with Steve Mihaylik, as well as his whole bodybuilding career. So that'll be next week on the Bodybuilding Legends Show. We'll see you guys then. Have a great week, everybody. Take care.